We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's Byte.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
On the Cowboys Sports Network from Learfield IMG College. Welcome to the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series. Brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. Now, here's the voice of the Cowboys, Dave Hunziker.
Welcome to the second in our special Cowboys Summer Series programs, brought to you by the Cowboys Sports Network and made possible by our friends at Oklahoma Genetics, and my name is Dave Hunziker. Well, we have a special treat for you today, an extensive visit with Oklahoma State head football coach Mike Gundy, previewing the upcoming season and covering a number of current topics in the world of college football. In the meantime, we want to tell you about another of Oklahoma State's outstanding wheat varieties marketed through Oklahoma Genetics, and this is a brand new one. It's Green Hammer. Green Hammer is recognized for excellent milling and baking quality, recognized by the Wheat Quality Council. It puts the hammer down when it comes to yield protection. In fact, it offers a yield protection advantage under leaf and stripe rust pressure that may lead to lower input costs. And Green Hammer also offers one of the highest protein levels for hard winter wheat. Green Hammer also offers Hessian fly resistance with a top-tier test weight. Log on to okgenetics.com to learn more about Green Hammer, one of Oklahoma State's outstanding new wheat varieties. We talk with Oklahoma State head coach Mike Gundy after these messages. This is the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield IMG College. This is the Cowboys Summer Series week number 2, and we're joined by OSU football head coach Mike Gundy. As you think back on this offseason, what maybe is the most important reflection you've had? It could be about last year. It could be in general. I know thoughts run through your mind as you're traveling and maybe out working on your farm. So what's been one or two reflections you've had this year?
My summer's been occupied mentally by us being a disciplined football team. We struggled at times last year in a variety of ways of just being a structured, disciplined football team, cost us 2 or 3 victories. So I've continued to communicate with our staff and the few times with our team about being a disciplined, tough football team. So we'll start that way in August and try to push really hard and be much better in those two areas. And my thoughts have been directed in with discipline and toughness over the last couple months.
So going back to the discipline part, obviously you try to coach that up, but how much of that is creating a team chemistry and a leadership structure that sort of fosters that?
The leadership is always important, and we never know what our team chemistry will be until usually middle to end of September. We've talked about that several times. My stress on the coaching staff is for the players to do everything right all the time. And if they do anything that's out of the ordinary, technique-wise, mentally-wise, effort-wise, meeting room-wise, that we're going to correct it right there. And I think that'll be a good start. Human nature for me over the last few years, we've had really good players and we're winning a lot of football games. And I've found in looking back that sometimes you let things go. You do it in raising your children. You know, I'm on my third one now, and he gets away with a lot more than my first one did. And so for that reason, I'm going back, and our staff's going to go back to the way that we developed this program. And really, we started winning in 2007-ish, 8-ish, 9-ish. We started to establish ourselves. We didn't leave any room for error. And that's what's going to make me feel more comfortable this fall with the staff and the team.
You sound excited, refreshed. And I mean, probably part of that, I'm guessing, is you look at that issue and say, hey, I can fix that. Is that part of it?
Sure. I can't develop a quarterback and give him game experience before we go to Oregon State. But we can train them and prepare them to be disciplined, structured players before we go to Oregon State. So it's almost like I'm getting a second wind. I don't think there's any denying that this profession can wear you down and run you to your limits at times. You see coaches stepping out that are relatively healthy guys and have a lot of years to work, but the 24/7 ongoing process of for me, I guess I can only speak for myself, of being a head coach at a Power 5 school, at times if you try to do too much, it can run you down a little bit. And I think that's kind of what happened to me last year, and I started to let things go more so than really keeping my finger on it. And so I am excited about getting started around the 1st of August.
There was a lot of change, Joe, involved with last year when you stop and think about it. New quarterback, totally different defensive scheme. And so those years are probably always challenging.
They are. But Corndog was a good player. I mean, it's debatable. I think if you took a poll of the, I don't know how many Power 5 conference schools there are, 65 schools or so, and if you said, I would like to have a quarterback that have these numbers throwing and these numbers rushing and was competitive and tough and stayed healthy throughout the season, I'll bet you 90% of them would say I'd take that right now. So he followed a great player, arguably the greatest and most productive quarterback here in Mason. So it's to a certain extent nobody's ever going to be happy. That's what happened to him. Defensively, we could have been more productive, but we weren't very disciplined. We were in the wrong place at the wrong times. We had way too many penalties, offsides, out of bounds, late hits. That's the area that I know we can improve in. Offensively, we had too many missed assignments up front. And that goes back to the discipline part of what we did. So there's some truth to that. We have a new quarterback this year and not near as experienced, and he's not going to look like Taylor did the first four or five games. People need to understand that we're going to go through a process here, same thing we went through with Mason. So the discipline and the structure and the toughness will be what's important in the early part of the season.
Talking with Coach Gundy on the Cowboy Summer Series here on the Cowboy Radio Network. So what's the most important work that gets done staff-wise from the end of spring ball to the time you get back here as a staff here in a week and a half or so?
Our new recruiting calendar has taken over. We recruited all the way up until June 23rd or 4th, which is different than the past. I'm not a big fan of it. I think it creates some issues. And in fact, I have voiced my opinion to the boards and the committees that young coaches getting in this profession with young families and children are going to be at a real strain right now. Secondly, we do some game planning, obviously for Oregon State, obviously for Tulsa, teams that we know there's not going to be much of a change, and get that prepared prior to the season. So during the season, when guys are a little fatigued and we're stressed for time, we have some blueprints there that we can follow that we do in a more of a this time of year. And then, of course, the players are in all their off season. This is a very difficult time for them, cardiovascular-wise, with Coach Glass, and we really try to push them to the limit and find out what kind of team we're going to have in the fall.
What role does the transfer portal play in the changes and the ongoing recruiting that never stops? That's brand new, and it seems like that might be playing a role. How much is that affected?
You know, Dave, the portal is almost like having a discussion with about religion and politics. You're never going to come out on top. Everybody has an opinion. It's being abused. The NCAA jumped into something much faster than they should have. Players and or attorneys that are getting tied into players are taking advantage of it. I'm very concerned about it. Now, let me clarify, because I'm not saying that a young man shouldn't be able to transfer if he doesn't have something at the current university that he's looking forward to every day. I'm also saying that if you graduate, you should be able to go wherever you want, whenever you want, except in conference. In fact, we're voting on that this week, and I'm not for transfers in conference because we have a good relationship in the Big 12. Our athletic directors, our head coaches, football and basketball, I'm not sure about the other sports because I'm not around them much. We go to meetings, and we have somewhat constructive discussions and meetings and make some headway on things that are important for the student athletes. If we open the doors to transfer, we're not going to have good relationships in this conference, period. So if we have a young man that's at Iowa State and he's a freshman and he rushes for 1,500 yards and he's a good player, and the coaches at another school in this league say, tell one of their players, hey, you ought to text him and see if he wants to come play for us. Because now they know he's an established player. They bring him to that school in conference and he can play the next year. It's not good for the league. So we have to be really careful that if we don't watch in-league transfers, we won't have Big 12 meetings that will be very constructive because there won't be anybody talking to each other. They won't want to be in the same room. So whether they like it or not, I've been in this league 15 years, and I know what it's like from the discussions I've had with coaches that are in the SEC that don't get along, and they're not very productive. So the coaches in this league have a relationship, and we can be productive in committees and meetings. You start transferring in league, those days are over. I don't care what anybody says. Coaches can say, well, I wasn't involved in it. Nobody's going to know, and they're still going to get frustrated. Now, the players that are transferring across the country and getting immediate eligibility, I don't believe in that. So, and the reason is because coaches can't manage numbers. We have 85 scholarships. The system's not built for us right now. If you have six or seven kids, two come out early. The four or five kids leave on the portal. One or two kids just say, I'm tired of football. I'm not playing anymore. A couple kids get a medical scholarship, and you can only replace a certain number of them. You're going to be short six or seven kids a year, and you don't have those numbers. So now you're going back to where your players are at risk of injury because you're out there competing with much fewer numbers than you should be. And the last thing is this, and I haven't really said this, but college football fans love college football now. And the fans at Oklahoma State and or I'm guessing the fans at Michigan, I'm just throwing a team out there, they like to see a young man come in as a freshman, maybe redshirt, maybe play a little bit, develop. They like to watch him. They like to follow him on social media. They see him develop. And he's a part of their team, almost like my mom always said. She grew up outside of Detroit. She said, if you were a Tiger once, you're a Tiger forever. Well, now, like the NBA, you have a good player on your team, and next year he doesn't play for you. So how can the fans get and stay attached to our team? We don't need to do anything with college football right now except keep it the way it is because the stock market on college football is going through the roof. I'm concerned with young men coming in and leaving, and the fans say, well, I thought he was playing for us. Well, now he's playing for Colorado. That concerns me because I know the fans like to get the relationship with the players. So there is a time that it could happen, but the young man, if he makes a decision and goes to a school and he wants to leave and go somewhere else, he needs to set a year unless he's a graduate. And I don't think there's ever a time that they should be able to transfer in league if we want to have a good working relationship in the Big 12.
As far as graduate transfers are concerned, and to some extent, ordinary transfers, transfers, the dynamics of getting a college education have changed. There's a lot more flexibility. You can take courses online. You can really progress toward a degree as a football player much faster than what you used to. How does that change all of this?
If they do, then they've obtained the goal. So you're seeing some young men that are graduating in 2.5 to 3 years. They're coming into school with 24 hours now, some of them. And if they've redshirted, they could potentially leave. There's been several young men across the country leave with 2 years of eligibility. I think you might see where young men could leave with three and be graduates, okay? Well, then they've graduated. They have the freedom to do that. Ultimately, that's the goal. So that's why I lean toward the graduate. If you're a graduate, you should be able to transfer and be eligible immediately anywhere except in the conference. And I think that's because of relationships. But if a young man graduates, then we have conquered and we've achieved, because that's what our ultimate goal is. It's just the ones that are leaving that are reaching for waivers and being immediately eligible. And the NCAA is not backing us as coaches to refurbish our numbers on our team. If they want to just have open borders, for lack of a better term, then they need to let us replenish our numbers. If I have 11 go out on the portal or an injury or just quit, I need to be able to bring 11 more in. That's after signing day. That's the issue. So, like this year, we had 22 seniors. So that means I got to replace 22 scholarships. I had two kids come out early. That's 24. I had five or six go on the portal. That's 30. Well, I only get 24. I only get 25. So where am I going to get those numbers? Now, they say you can give the scholarships back to young men that are on your team as walk-ons and put them on aid. I'm good with that. I love the walk-ons. They're worth $1 million, and we've done that. But if you continue to do that at times, in most cases, some of them may not be up to par athletically. So your blue blood schools are going to make a living off that. And that's going to not, or that's going to take away the parity. See, we have a lot of parity in college football right now. People love that. If you don't watch it, you're going to just run six or eight schools to a certain point, and the other 30 or 40 that have been really close and beating them a lot, they're not going to be in their league, and now it's not going to be very fun. So they need to either go one way or the other, get a grasp on the transfer portal, or say, let the coaches say, hey, if I got 22 go out, I replace 22. If I have six or eight go out based on medical or porter, I bring six or eight in. I'm good either way.
More with Coach Gundy coming up. This is the Cowboy Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. We continue on the Cowboy Summer Series as we resume our visit with Cowboy Head Coach Mike Gundy. Last segment, we were talking about the recruiting component, obviously the whole transfer portal situation, how that's playing out. So we've discussed that, but how else is coaching different and coaching players different now than maybe it was 10 years ago?
I think it's interesting that the young men that we're coaching are the same. What's changed are the parents, the way that they're handling their sons or daughters. I see it all across the country. I see it in little league sports. I see it in college, where parents are more involved. And you're seeing parents grab their sons or daughters and drive them to a different state to play on a team to think that they can win. And so, and they're being treated differently, and social media is treating athletes differently. You're seeing young men or young women who are 14 years old that are on ESPN, or they're out there and somebody's rated them or somebody's offered them a scholarship. And so their perception of themselves is different than what it was 10, 15 years ago before we had this, when young men came to campus to work hard and earn a spot on a team instead of being here thinking that somebody is going to give them something based on somebody told them how good they were. That's what's changed, and that's coming from the parents, that it's okay for their son or daughter to fail. Let them fail. Let them recover and let them fix it instead of fixing everything for them. That's what I see. I'm guilty of that as a parent myself, is that, okay, let me help them. You know, I heard a quote the other day, it's not really what you do for your children, it's what you don't do for them that's going to make them better in the long run. So I think the parents have affected young people, male and female, as college athletes, from a standpoint of they're always trying to fix their issues instead of letting them fix themselves.
Interesting perspective. So let's go back to the whole social media thing. Is developing team chemistry and building a team more challenging because via social media, all of these young people become big individuals. They have their own big presence, far more so, I would guess, certainly than 10 years ago. Does that make building that team chemistry and that leadership more important? Because it would seem that probably they're more individualistic.
For us at Oklahoma State, it reinforces consistency in how we recruit, communicate. We're very upfront with the young men. We do the same thing when we get them here. The majority of the ones we're recruiting, everybody's told them how good they are. That's fine. They're victims also. They can't get around that. You get a young man's a good player, 247 or ESPN, somebody's been telling him he's good since he's been 15 years old. Well, that's not his fault. So for us at Oklahoma State, it goes back to consistency in how we recruit. We're probably too upfront. We're probably too honest. But what it does is it creates a cohesiveness when we get young men here, because we didn't tell them anything, didn't promise them anything. I think that sometimes they hear that, they go somewhere, it doesn't come through. Now you're back to the portal. That's not what I was told. So maybe it hurts us at times in recruiting, but I'm not gonna put myself out there or put our team out there or our coaches out there to steer a young man to come to school here that's going to disrupt the chemistry on our team. And you're seeing this a lot. Like, just, I don't know if people give this some thought, but so if you're trying to recruit a position and you're recruiting a good, really good player to play that position, at that same position, you might have schools that are taking fifth-year transfers 3 years in a row that are coming in, and those kids aren't getting to play. So some schools are using a transfer as saying, okay, I know there's a young man that's playing for this school. He's got a year or two left. He's proven at this level. See, we don't know about any young men that come to this level. We don't know how good they're going to be. We don't know what if their stars make them a good player or not. But if they play 2 years in college and they're really good, now we know they're good. And then you continue to transfer kids in and play. The ones that have been in the program have transfer out and leave. How productive is that? I don't know. At some point, you're going to see a negative pattern. So there's a lot going on right now. And I guess the short answer to what you said is for Oklahoma State, consistency, being very transparent, being very upfront, we're not getting away from our core values. This is what we do. Maybe it hurts us a little bit in recruiting or not, but in the long run, for team chemistry, I think it's going to make us much more healthy.
So I would guess that, of course, players are so widely known, in many cases so widely promoted, 4-star, 5-star, whatever the case may be, but it sounds like what I'm hearing you say is you have to be really wary of who you take and who you get involved with because of the chemistry issue and making sure it all fits together. It sounds like it would be easy to just go chase, but the next thing you know, you might have transfers. You may not know what you're dealing with. So it sounds like that part of it is pretty important.
And the numbers that we try to untangle in the staff room, certain allotment of scholarships by position, offense, defense, special teams. And then if you stack those guys up and you have a young man in your program for 2 years and he's stacked and he leaves, essentially you burn 2 years on a young man. He's not even in your program. So for us, for me, we have a lot of meetings. We have discussions on it where you can't stack guys at a position. You can look at any school in the country, and there's schools that are in the top 10 right now, and they have supposedly have really good quarterbacks there. Well, they've already left. So, do you keep a if you're a really solid two deep at a position, and maybe a young guy behind him that's developing or a walk on, what you would call maybe 2.5 deep? Do you take one that next year at that position and go 3.5 deep? One of them might leave. Or do you try to solidify the position? So there's a lot of jockeying for position and thoughts going on about the scholarships based on the transfer.
One other sidebar topic, and then next segment we'll get into the upcoming season. How concerned are you about safety as far as the sport's concerned? And do you see any other significant changes coming in the sport in a need to address it?
I think we're moving in the right direction. I'm old school, but there are some things that were some changes being made that I think in the long run are going to help. There's a new rule this year that offensive players can get targeting just like defensive players this year. For example, the blocks that Tylan Wallace had last year, the two or three crackback blocks, I think one was at Baylor and maybe West Virginia or somebody, I can't remember. All three of those would have been targeting. He would be ejected this year, and they were clean blocks last year. So what they're saying is that any player that uses the crown of his head offensively or defensively in any way, shape, or form is immediately ejected. And then any player who is hitting from the shoulder up is immediately ejected. And that's different than last year. And you're going to see that show up because that's a rule they put in. And so they're going to call it. It's difficult. I think they're in the process of trying to come up with a review system for it, which I think is good. I don't think that anybody that can make that call on the field in just a blink of the eye. The officials, I mean, it'd be difficult to say he used the crown. You know, they define the crown of the helmet is where if you were a king and you put a crown on your helmet, if you use that part, you're immediately ejected. I think that the key this year will be the review process and how effective that is based on what people say in the booth.
We'll have more in just a bit, but once again, we're joined by Dr. Brett Carver, who is Oklahoma State's wheat breeder. Of course, Oklahoma Genetics, the sponsor of our Cowboys Summer Series. It's interesting, and I've learned about this in the work that I do with OGI and the wheat breeding program. Consumers are having more of an influence on wheat overall, it sounds like, than ever before. Why is that the case? How's that changed?
Consumers, and that's you and me, right? Yeah. We want to know more about our food, where it's produced, how it's produced. And one growth from that, one a product of that has been this what's called a clean label movement. Clean label is all about cleaning up the label on our food products, removing some of the things we just don't know what they are. They don't make sense to us. And clean label also may mean fewer ingredients. Well, how has that impacted wheat production and what farmers are growing? It's just phenomenal how this has occurred. And you kind of think about it from the grocery store back to the farm. Well, in the grocery store, the consumer is looking at the ingredients on the food label and they're saying, okay, I don't want this, I don't want that. Well, that puts pressure on the food manufacturer now to make a product with fewer inputs, fewer ingredients. Therefore, the baker in this case is going to have to rely on a flour that has some of the inherent characteristics that they're looking for instead of having to add things that make those characteristics present. So now the baker is asking the miller, okay, give me this flour. Well, the miller's going to say, well, I have to have the right variety to give me that kind of flour to give to the baker. And so now the farmers are being asked to grow certain varieties that give the millers these characteristics. That's influencing our wheat breeding program to the nth degree. Now we have to come up with a variety that fits very specific and pretty stringent criteria for food production.
How's that transition gone?
Oh, I think it's going pretty well. So far, we can tell by the way that the millers are asking for certain varieties. They call them preferred variety lists. The OSU wheat varieties are showing up with high frequency on those lists. And I'm really glad to see that because we want to win yield trials, but we also want to be in the mills. We want to be in the bakeries and end up in the food.
That's Dr. Brett Carver, Oklahoma State University's wheat breeder. More coming up on the Cowboys Summer Series from Learfield IMG College. Continuing with Coach Gundy on the Cowboys Summer Series, and let's talk about this year's team. And let's start on defense. Very simply, how much improvement could we see defensively simply because guys now are familiar with the scheme?
You should see a considerable amount. Again, that should help with the discipline. The late hits, the penalties, the pass interference, a lot of that was frustration. Defensive players in this league get frustrated at every school. And so I think we can see and or be more productive in our schemes. And you have a little more maturity in the secondary is going to make a difference. Playing secondary in this league is difficult. And when you're young, it's really difficult. So I think with their ability and experience, we should see them be more effective in defense.
Was the transition to the new scheme even bigger than what you expected it to be, more challenging or no?
I think the transition for Coach Knowles more than the scheme. Just, it's hard for defense coordinators that are outside this league to come in here and realize that coordinators offensive in this league are this crazy. They're willing to throw the ball deep and do it and never give in and just keep doing it. And they have no regards in play calling. And I don't think anybody out there that's not coached in this league on defense understands it.
It's interesting because that's the comment he made to us before the spring game. Try to score on every play. He said, I've never seen anything like it. In this league, everybody tries to score on every play. And we take that for granted because we've been absorbed in this as fans and such for many years. But it's unique, isn't it?
It's the Major League Baseball. Nobody wants to hit 300 anymore. Everybody just wants to hit 40 home runs. And the players will admit it. They don't care because you get paid for home runs. You don't get paid to hit 300. In this league for, what, 6, 8, 10 years, these coordinators want to score every play. They don't care, and nobody's worried about getting a first down. They're trying to score. And defensive guys haven't been in this league. They don't understand it. And they're almost have an adjustment to a guy taking a shot 4 or 5 times a game. Well, in this league, they'll take 30 or 40 shots a game. They don't care. And so I think the adjustment was more for him than the young men in the scheme.
Do you like the scheme overall now that you know it? I mean, obviously you knew it going into. That's why you switched to it. But as you learn more, what do you like most about it?
You know, what's interesting is most everybody's the same now. You're seeing, I'm going to guess you're going to see over 80% three down in this league now to a certain extent. And you get three rushers, and it's just based on whether you want to play man or zone in the back end. So the schemes are really consistent with just about anybody we play. And offensive players used to have to learn to block and protect a three-down or four-down team. Well, everybody plays three-down or four-down now. So it's the same. It doesn't make a difference. You can almost have a plan. Now, when you play some stack teams like what West Virginia used to be, and they're more of a blitzing cover one team, well, that can be a little different. But the rest of it's pretty much the same now.
You know, with that thought in mind, is the counter to this more use of the tight end? Starting to see it.
I don't think there's any question it'll turn a full circle. You're going to see teams using a tight end. They went away from it because defenses went away from a four-down front because that extra tight end was a wideout standing out there catching passes. So they took a guy out of the game, put a skill kid in, stood him out there with him. That's all that happened. And so I think now you're going to see teams start to use a tight end more to help benefit the running game. It'll be different in this league because of what you're getting going to get or what I think you're going to get at Kansas and Kansas State. See, they're not wide open passing teams. Yeah. I mean, they're going to play with tight ends and fullbacks or two tight ends at times. Now, I know Kansas State did some of that, but Kansas certainly didn't. And I'm going to guess Coach Miles is going to do what he's always done. So you're going to see more of that just from those two schools and what we've seen in the past.
What are your biggest concerns as you think defensively this year?
We're really young in the defensive line, and we don't have any experience at linebacker. So secondary, we have a mature team. I think we're close to being too deep. We're going to have to get good play out of 6 or 7 defensive linemen compared to the 3 guys we relied on this year. And then we're going to have to get linebackers to play much better than they should based on their youth.
More with Coach Gundy coming up in just a few moments. In the meantime, we want to tell you about another of Oklahoma State's outstanding wheat varieties marketed through Oklahoma Genetics. And here's one that really almost performs like a Heisman Trophy candidate. If you want high yield potential, Lone Rider is your choice. In fact, Lone Rider has the broadest geographic reach among all the OSU varieties throughout the Western Plains. It's an innovative new wheat variety created by OSU researchers and marketed through our friends at Oklahoma Genetics. If you want strong yields without the weak straw, Lone Rider's a great choice. Lone Rider has the standability and short stature, good for maximizing irrigated yields, and finishes early with a large kernel. Hey, saddle up with Lone Rider. Log on to okgenetics.com to learn more. Back with Coach Gundy after these messages. This is the Cowboy Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. This is the Cowboy Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield IMG College. Cowboy Summer Series featuring Oklahoma State head football coach Mike Gundy. We've talked defense. Now let's talk a little offense. I'll just throw this out there right now. Is there a scenario, do you think, under which you might play both Drew Brown and Spencer Sanders on a regular basis?
If we don't have a player that exhibits that he's much better than the other before the first game, then we have to play both. And if we find a player based on his productivity and leadership ability, then we'll name a starter. I think some schools hold out. We haven't done that here. I've never done that. Okay. When we know we have a quarterback, we're going to name a quarterback. And if we don't have one, then both young men deserve to play. And we have, we're dealing with a couple young men and both have parents. So in the cohesiveness and chemistry of your team, in all fairness, both parents, if they were to come and sit down in my office and say, why is my son playing or not playing, I should be able to give them a good resolution. I should be able to say, this is why. So if you don't have one that's taken over, then the other one deserves to play some. Am I a big fan of that? Not really. We did it before, but we had two different concepts when Mason was young and JW would come in and do certain things for us. That was very productive for us, okay? But if we don't have a guy that proves to us he's much better than the other guy, then you're going to end up playing two.
How are Sanders and Brown different?
Well, Spencer's much more athletic, and Drew is a gym rat, really savvy, plays better than what you think he would when you just look at him. You know, you look at him and you think, well, maybe he's a little slow, maybe he's a little short, but he's a very savvy, productive player.
How much does experience matter in all of this? Because Brown has played, albeit not at this level, Sanders is not.
Game experience. Spencer's going to be nervous. Drew's going to be a little bit nervous, but at least he's been out there. So from the actual game day, there'll be an advantage for Drew. But Spencer's played at a high school and has won a whole bunch of games and played at a really, really high level in front of 15,000 people. So that should benefit him. And Drew's benefit is he's already played at this level.
You have a new offensive coordinator, Sean Gleason. What has he brought to your staff that maybe has enhanced what you're doing?
He has good ideas. He's an intelligent coach. You and I have had discussions before about this. And over the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I've gone to hiring very intelligent coaches, and I think they can do anything. They'll figure things out. So he has a lot of good ideas. He's obviously calling our offense. I don't know anything about his play calling abilities. Never know anything about any of them until they get here and do it. Once they've been here, I've been fortunate. The last 4 or 5 guys I've had over a period of time, they get better and better and better and better. So I see him in the same direction. He's a more of a fundamentalist coaching quarterbacks than what we've had here in the past. He's into technique. I think he does a really good job. He's obviously very well prepared, and he's very savvy with technology and computers and things like that. And I think the players like him. He has a good demeanor. He's young. He's enthusiastic. That's why we brought him here. So I think we'll be just fine with Sean.
Another new member of your staff is your offensive line coach, Charlie Dickey. Of course, we've watched him closely coach Kansas State's offensive line, had a lot of guys that weren't necessarily highly recruited that turned out to be big-time NFL guys. So now that you've worked with him and brought him on board, what do you see with him that you think makes him successful?
Well, he's fantastic. He's an awesome person. He's had a history of taking young men and developing them over the years. His players have a lot of respect for him. He's very knowledgeable. He's very accountable, and he's very loyal. And you can't ask for any other ingredients for a guy. And he's a technician. The players like him. They'll play hard for him. He has an innate ability to make them be accountable to him in all areas, not just on the field, but all areas. And that's going to make for a good coach.
Is that underappreciated in offensive line play? The fact that the cohesiveness, the bonding with the position coaches, people don't think about that as being important, but I get the impression it is.
Well, it's really important because they're the guys that are out there that are the most non-athletic, so they have to hang their hat on that. You know, they build their own little world, and they do things that are a little unusual for compared to other positions. And he's right there with them. He's played the position. He understands them. He gets it. And so they have to build that chemistry amongst themselves. And I've been really impressed with what he's done, and he brings a toughness. I mean, he was with Coach Snyder for a number of years, and they're going to block and try to out-tough you and out-condition you. And he's had that instilled in him for the 9 or 10 years he was with Coach Snyder.
Were you surprised when Josh Henson left that Charlie Dickey was available?
Yes. I had tried to hire him a couple times before, and he was very loyal to Coach Snyder and wouldn't budge. So the timing, Josh has ambitions of being a head coach, and so he had an opportunity to go and I'm guessing get a little more responsibility and maybe even potentially a coordinator if Jimbo stops calling the plays. I'm not sure what went on there. So he felt like that here he was just kind of spinning his wheels from that standpoint. And then it just worked out that when he did leave, I was surprised. But then when Charlie was available, I mean, I called him 5 minutes later and he took the job. So that was a good break for Oklahoma State.
Talking with Coach Gundy on the Cowboys Summer Series, Tylan Wallace, another All-American receiver. And Casey Dunn has had his hand in a lot of All-America wide receivers here at Oklahoma State. What makes him so good at coaching that position?
He knows what he's looking for. He's done it a long time. He's a really good football coach. He's disciplined. He's structured. He gets close with his players. He trains them. They respect him. They work hard for him. There's a lot of different ways to have success, but his way of knowing which young men to go after, why he's going after them, what position they're going to play, and how to train them. That's what he's done. He's built a reputation now, arguably, as the best wideout coach in the country. And for that reason, he's had a lot of success and continues to be able to recruit top-notch players.
As we wrap things up here on the Cowboys Summer Series, our visit with Cowboy head coach Mike Gundy getting ready for the upcoming season. This is a pretty hard question, but I'll throw it out there just for fun. You were under the radar in 2015 going into that season, but you're coming off a great surge at the end of the year and a big bowl win as an underdog. So just for fun, you think 2019 could be like 2015? Now, that team started 10-0. That's a lot. That's a big bar to jump after. But could this team fly under the radar but turn out to be something a lot more than people might expect?
As I said earlier, discipline and toughness. You have to stay healthy. You have to have the key guys at key positions that are mature, that can help you win on the road, be healthy. We have to develop a quarterback. He doesn't have to throw for a lot of yards and become a guy that throws a bunch of touchdown passes. He has to orchestrate and let the offense function. We have good players on the perimeter to get the ball to and in the backfield. That guy has to be consistent and take care of the football. And defensively, we have to limit big plays like always, and we have to be more disciplined and minimize penalties. That gives us a chance to play much better than what people think we're going to do, supposedly.
And kind of with that thought in mind, with the tailbacks you have and Chuba Hubbard at the top of the list, certainly there's a chance to maybe lean more on those guys than you might ordinarily because you've got a lot back there.
Those guys, you know, Chuba needs to be ready to carry the ball 20 times a game. And we've got guys behind him who can come in and give him a break. And I think he's durable enough to do it. He showed some of that at the latter part of the year. He's a physical, showed that he's a physical, tough kid, likes to play the game. So we'll be versatile. You know, people have said that. You have a new quarterback, you can run it more. That's not who we are. I mean, if we get 80 plays in a game, probably going to throw it 45 times. I mean, that's just what we do. There'll be 35 or 40 chances for us to run the football, but we're not going to change our philosophy unless we just can't function at all at quarterback. I don't see it happening that way.
We'll have more coming up, but in the meantime, once again, joined by Dr. Brett Carver, who is Oklahoma State University's wheat breeder. Of course, our program brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, which is the marketing arm of Oklahoma State University's wheat breeding program. Earlier in the show, you were talking about the misinformation regarding gluten and all that's happened in the last 10 years with that. The thing is, though, as part of that, I think there's a perception that a lot of manipulation's been done as far as what's coming from wheat and so on and so forth, when in reality, the ancient grain is pretty close to this process and has stayed there throughout this process. And I don't know that people understand that. They believe something else, I think.
Well, they believe that ancient grains may be an alternative to wheat. Consuming wheat product, let's go consume ancient grains. Well, it's important to realize that three of the ancient grains out there are essential parts of the wheat family tree. In other words, where wheat came from, it came from these ancient grains. What are they? Einkorn, with other names, einkorn, emmer, other also called farro, and spelt. Well, einkorn is the progenitor or the origination of, in most part, of emmer. Emmer constitutes 2/3 of the genetics of today's wheat. It constitutes 100% of the genetics of today's pasta wheat. But a bread wheat is 2/3. So it should come as no surprise that when you look at the DNA of today's wheat, there's a 98% identity between those ancient grain species and our modern wheat. That leaves less than 2% for differences. And those differences just came about naturally through natural variation. So there really is very little difference. In fact, here's the kicker. We use those ancient grains to breed the wheat today. Emmer is a big part of the breeding process. That's like a genetic reservoir to go find these traits we need, like disease resistance, pest resistance, drought resistance. and other species that I haven't even mentioned that we consume as ancient grains. So really, today's wheat is just a melting pot.
That's Dr. Brett Carver, Oklahoma State University wheat breeder. More to come on the Cowboy Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College. Welcome back to the Cowboy Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. And here's a word about another of Oklahoma State's outstanding wheat varieties marketed through our friends at Oklahoma Genetics. Weather in Oklahoma, well, we know how unpredictable and how difficult it can be, especially for wheat farmers. Well, if you want to tackle Oklahoma's tough weather head-on, Bentley is a great choice. It's another of OSU's Graze and Grain and Golden Grain wheat varieties marketed through Oklahoma Genetics. Bentley has posted a top-flight yield record for nearly a decade and offers yield stability in drought-stressed environments. Bentley also offers good forage production and later winter dormancy with intermediate heading. Bentley is a perfect fit for the Central Wheat Corridor with exceptional baking quality that's been verified by the Wheat Quality Council. To find out more about Bentley and other outstanding OSU created wheat varieties, log on to okgenetics.com. That's okgenetics.com. Next week, a special treat on the Cowboys Summer Series, an in-depth conversation with former Cowboy quarterback Brandon Weeden, who of course went on to the NFL after his outstanding record-setting career at Oklahoma State. In the meantime, have a great rest of the weekend and a terrific week next week. I'm Dave Hunziker, and this has been the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics and Learfield IMG College.
On the Cowboys Sports Network from Learfield IMG College, this has been the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Cowboys Sports Network.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.